This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps, and each week with an inspiring guest, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. So, here we go. This week, we're talking all about slime as a factor in mental health, as we continue to, through these conversations, show that mental health relates to everything, and everything, even in this case, slime, can relate to mental health. This was a conversation I was so excited to have because, as you'll hear, it's a fun topic, but there's also such depth to the experience of our guests today. And indeed, this was a reminder of why I love the way we structure our interviews here, because we get to really explore with guests and, in going deep, kind of get to the stuff that maybe a lot of other interviewers aren't asking them or aren't kind of sitting and being present with. So if you're subscribed on Apple Podcasts for our extended length ad-free episodes, you'll hear, you know, that was the first reflection the guests had for me, that I was so good at being present with them. And, you know, it was a lovely full circle moment in an episode that, without giving too much away, is a lot about finding organic ways to be more present and mindful and slow down and get off our devices and so many other things. So if you've ever considered signing up for our premium subscription, I think this might be the one for you to go get that free trial, see what you think, because our guests today just kept opening up more and more, and that very much continued behind the paywall. So without giving any more away on this fun and surprising theme, that I don't know if we'll ever get to talk about slime again, so I'm here for it. And honestly, by the end of it, I was hooked. And after this recording, I'm going to go buy some slime, as I said I would in the episode. So my guests are Karen Rabinowitz and Sarah Schiller, and they created a company called Slumu. And even the name has a story. So we'll leave it right there, get into the interview. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
Hi, I am Karen Rabinowitz. It is really nice to be here. So thank you for having us. You know, the story about how we both got into slime and created a business around it is a really personal one and a really difficult one. And it very much stems from mental health. About 6 years ago, my whole life pretty much imploded. I had been married for nearly 14 years. Well, we were together for nearly 14 years and married for 11. And we were going through a very difficult time in our marriage. My husband at the time had a lot of depression problems, or battles, I should say. And he was a strong Italian man who didn't really love to talk about it. And it really came out through anger. And I was living in a house that was not easy to live in. And it definitely also triggered a lot of my own anxieties. And we had separated. And during the time that we were apart, he passed away. And I had a seismic nervous breakdown and literally didn't know how any form of life could go on, and fell into a very, very dark depression. A few months after, I then lost my cousin in the Parkland school shooting, and the grief and pain I was in just became an unbearable place to live. And I really saw sort of no future for myself. And Sarah and I have been friends for 15 years, and she was one of the people who really did show up for me. And this is when you're going through something like this, this is the time where you see who your friends really are. Mm-hmm. I'm also somebody who's not afraid to ask for help. And so I was asking for help. I was asking for help every which avenue I could get it. And I was getting professional help, and I was in therapy, and I saw a psychiatrist, and I saw energy workers and healers and acupuncturists and grief counselors and support group. And it was actually a full-time job just to keep me going. And I was really incapable of working. I had a company that I walked away from during this time as well. I didn't see my future there, and I definitely didn't see my healing there.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like from what you shared, you're just such the example of asking for help. There's nearly not a professional left that you didn't ask for support with. And I just wanted to check in with Sarah on this. When you were aware of what Karen was going through and she was opening up to you about all that had happened, how was that for you navigating it, and how did you find the kind of the language and knowledge of how best to support her?
I mean, I think to start with, as Karen said, just showing up as a friend is going a long way, and being an ear and a listener, because so many of us find out that we're actually either alone or you're really isolated and you don't have that support. And having someone who you know, Karen knows she could call me at any time, that I was there to meet her, to connect, was a way of literally almost even physically being there for her, which I think enabled her to have some level of stability.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. And I think so often we can overcomplicate what it is to be there for someone. And actually, a lot of the time, it is those straightforward steps of being there to listen, being in physical presence to keep somebody company in what can feel such a lonely and isolating experience like grief. And for you, Karen, you know, particularly around losing your ex-husband, I think that's one that people don't always have the best understanding of, because we can think of relationships in this kind of narrow binary way sometimes, of it's either happening or it's over. And so even though you were no longer together, I can totally understand why, you know, you were still feeling that grief and there's such a sense of loss there, even though, you know, some people may not always get that.
He, you know, we didn't not love each other anymore. And it was just that we had stopped working. And I think that perhaps we each stop working individually too. And when you're in a relationship, and I've always been somebody who's not afraid to ask for help, as just my natural makeup. I come from the position of asking for help as a sign of strength, not weakness, mm-hmm. because I think it takes more courage to ask for help than to stuff it down and to admit that you have vulnerabilities. For me, is courage. And we differed in that way. And I was living in sort of anger that he wasn't able to get help or wasn't able to reach out or share it, because I felt like I was the person you can share it with, because I'm the one who would never judge. And I'm the one who would meet it with open arms. And I'm the one who would meet it with any understanding somebody needs. And I spent so much of my time and still spend so much of my time in search of how to be better, or like very open to hearing things that I might not do that are great in order for me to be better as a human being. And I knew that I wouldn't get to the light in that same space with him. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, was hoping he would find his own light, and he didn't. And I didn't think he would lose his life. So my pain it's intense, because you can never get back that time. You replay every ounce of your relationship. You see so much potential for somebody. And I also, I think during that time, every day was really a struggle for me to just get through the day. I used to wonder how one could survive in that much pain. I was surely going to die of a broken heart at the very least. And then losing a family member in a school shooting is just another level of like, how can the world be this hard? And how can you, seeing other people you care about in that much pain is, I mean, it's excruciating.
Yeah. It must have been, you know, such a feeling of people being taken away from you.
It's dark. I can only just say that it's dark, and I was really suffering, and I was taking an antidepressant. I was talking to people. I was reaching out to people in my same situation. I had friends there. I was lucky that I had a support group. And I think one of the reasons I had a support group was because I am somebody who's open to sharing and talking mm-hmm. about these things. And so over time, you build up the people that, you know, you can rely on, because like attracts like.
I can see how scary the whole thing, you know, clearly was for you, that you're in this situation where you tried for so long to help your husband. You'd found a lot of coping mechanisms that had worked for you. And for whatever reasons, he wasn't in the place where he could access them or those approaches worked for him. And then you lose him. And then that's compounded with losing someone in a school shooting. You know, one of these things that so explicitly should never happen, you know, feels so intrinsically wrong. And yet,
and I believe
still
school shootings are, it's excruciating because, like, I felt hopeless and helpless.
Yeah. And you were going to share with me when you found something surprising that you connected to at a time when all the usual coping mechanisms weren't working for you.
Weren't working. Or weren't enough, I should say. Mm-hmm. Just didn't work. A friend came over and her daughter, who's 10, had slime with her. And I grew up with slime in the 70s. I knew there was this like interesting zeitgeist and subculture focused around it. And I wanted to see her slime. And the minute I sort of sunk my hands into it, I had this feeling of being enthralled. And I didn't even really realize it, but 4 hours went by. And in those 4 hours, when my friend was leaving, I was like, I just played for 4 hours without feeling pain. I was like a child again and in this incredible place of wonder and joy. And I didn't think that either of those emotions would ever be possible for me again. And I said, it has to be the slime. Where do I get more of this? This is better than Lexapro. I'm not saying that for everybody else. You know, everybody else should find their own path. I'm just saying for me, this did something for me that nothing else did. So I started to buy slime and the excitement of my packages coming and opening it and smelling it and feeling it and listening to it because it makes sounds it's so incredibly joyful for me that it became a tool that I relied on. And then as Sarah is a friend and had a lot of stress and challenges in her own life, I said, oh my God, Sarah, you have to play with slime with me. And that began our journey of adults playing with slime as a form of escape and happiness in a way.
I love
that. So I'll pass it over to Sarah because, you know, I also knew that I could call her and she would be all in on something that seemed as silly as playing with slime.
I just want to add there as well. I love in the information your team sent over that after this, you asked, you know, where do you get the good stuff? Where's the good slime coming from?
Yeah,
and it nearly sounds like, you know, it's fun. It's a funny thing to say, but also it sounds like it was an achievable quandary for you, that you'd found something that you could connect to in a very kind of visceral and present way, where you're like, okay, now I need to get the best slime. That's something I can focus on that's solvable and simple and fun and the opposite to so much else that I'm feeling right now.
And you know what's so interesting was the hunt for finding the good stuff and became an escape in such a healthy way in and of itself.
Yeah.
Because I could go, when I get into something, I am go big or go home. So it could be, you know, hours of addictive searching, but look what I'm searching for. Colorful, playful things that had all different smells like cookies and brownies and marshmallow and, you know, things that for me conjure happiness.
Mm-hmm. And for you then, Sarah, you get this call of, okay, so now we're going to start hanging out with slime. What are you thinking?
Yeah. So, you know, Karen and I have a different journey than Karen, but it has a lot of parallels. So I have two girls, and the girls are critical to the story because they're essentially, Karen is their aunt at this time, or best friend, depending on which kid. But my older daughter, who's now 15, has a rare genetic syndrome called Angelman syndrome. And a symptom of her syndrome is actually happiness, which is an amazing person to have in your life, someone who is naturally lends themselves to being happy all the time. But the downside of that is she has a lot of limitations in a very classic sense. She can't speak. She can't feed herself. She can't do a lot of activities of daily living. So on a day-to-day basis, she needs a full-time support person and care. Layer on top of that, the fact that at age 50, my husband had bilateral strokes, and he lost the ability to speak, feed himself, and do any activities of daily living. And the one person who was there for me through all of this was Karen. And we definitely have this bond of supporting each other through everything. When Karen came over with Slime, what I didn't realize at the time, besides just the joy of playing and feeling good and connecting, was the opportunity it would give my second child, my now 11-year-old, who was 6 at the time, because it allowed me to sit there and play with her and for us to talk and have conversations about like her really hard life and everything. Like, she's never heard her dad speak, right? So we were able to talk about things that are really hard, but in a way for her, she was actually, we were just playing and sliming together. And it's comforting. The slime in and of itself is comforting, but it's also really nice to connect as a mother and a daughter together. So we really, it helped us gel as a family. And to this day, we will still once or twice a week sit on the red couch with our collection of slime and play together and talk and have a moment. And I actually want all families to have this moment, because it's so hard to get your kid off of a device and they're going through so much more stress and social pressures than ever. And slime is actually a great avenue to connect with your child.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see that. And I think part of that must be that it's kind of a healthy distraction. Like, it's something to get out sort of any maybe nervous energy into something that's fun, in the way that, you know, for me growing up, like my mom, I think, once read in a parenting book that you should have important conversations that you know are going to be maybe tricky or big whilst driving. And whilst we've since discussed that, and we're not sure on reflection if when one of you is driving, that's the best place for a stressful conversation. The idea of it was that you've got the distraction of you're both looking ahead. There's not that sort of face-to-face, no distractions, staring into each other's, you know, eyes, trying to figure each other out and watch for tells of how you're handling the conversation. And instead, you're both looking ahead and keeping an eye on the road and seeing, you know, getting distracted by the same funky car passing whilst, you know, just focusing on the words.
As somebody who's witnessed this, like knowing Sarah has this connection with Charlie, her daughter, and I hope that Charlie will never, ever, 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 ever get over playing with slime as a way to communicate with her mom, because what I think it has enabled is an incredible openness of sharing. And I believe, and Charlie is a very mature, empathetic child. I really believe that if Charlie goes through struggles, or when, because everybody does, that she actually has this sort of like safe comfort zone of knowing her mom is there, and that when they can sit and literally distract their hands by playing with slime, they actually get to focus on true connection. And I think on some level, that takes away from a feeling of loneliness that I think is inherent in like today's pandemic kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a wonderful habit forming of, you know, this is something we do together. As
I pray it's what Charlie does with her kids one day.
Yeah, and conversation is a part of that habit. I think that's lovely. And for both of you, how did it form in terms of making this deep connection of, okay, this is something really fun and really free and kind of silly, to, okay, just how much this is impacting each of our lives, mental health-wise? Do you want to go first, Karen?
Because we were in so much joy. Sarah and I would get on the phone and talk about slime regularly. And we would talk about all of these new ideas that started to surface because we were playing with slime. And it would range from ways amazing contemporary artists can interpret slime to the way scent is impacting us and how we could smell something and it could take us right back to being 7 in a really fun, playful way. And how, you know, we were experiencing textures that we had never felt before. And we were like, other people need to feel what we're feeling. We have to bring this to people. And I think that when we first set about making this fun experience as like a little kind of side hustle pop-up suddenly became a concept for a much larger lifestyle brand that really speaks to the importance of sensory play and the way that you could tap into your senses and sort of get off the device, leave other things behind, escape, and find solace and create an environment that could speak to our missions as human beings because of what we've each been through. And as friends, then we could support each other's missions. Like Sarah comes from a place of really wanting to support neurodiversity because of the experience she's had with her daughter and now her husband. And I come from a place of really wanting to support mental health because of what I've gone through. And then we could just go all in and say, we could actually turn this into a world that has a real meaning to it and isn't just, oh, to the trend, let's do something trendy. But, oh, this brought us something. We could give this to others. And while we're doing it, we could make a magical world that actually gives back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like it was a really organic way of being more mindful for you, that it was connecting you to, yeah, sensory sensations, your environment, all these different kind of senses of interacting with the world in a way that, you know, a lot of the time you have to be taught, you know, through mindfulness or meditation to be that connected. You know, that's a like vital part of like going in and out of meditation, for example, is the, you know, sensing your environment and then separating from it and instead focusing on your breath or, you know, other kind of focuses in this way. And then indeed, when you come out of that state, you are reacclimatizing to the world gradually, maybe opening your eyes, maybe being aware of the sounds that you might have blocked out by that point. And it sounds like Slime kind of gave you the in to what a lot of other people need to be taught to find that being present in the moment and just existing, which in our, like you say, in our digital worlds, we can be so external. We can be, you know, totally in our phone of what is that person across the other side of the world doing versus how am I feeling? What's going on for me? Because it's crazy how much we can miss. And
very true.
For you, Sarah, what was that like, you know, witnessing that in your child?
I think that the ability for her to be fully off of a device and fully immersed in Slime is a gift that she has and that she'll take with her. But even for my older daughter, and what's great about Slumu, and we're actually not called a Slime Museum for a reason, because Slumu embraces all aspects of sensory play, is that we have an ASMR room, the Slumuverse, where you can go in and there's ASMR sounds and a full 360-degree CGI video. And I always say, if you can't find Sammy, my 15-year-old with the genetic syndrome, she's in the Slumuverse because she can go in there for a half hour or an hour and literally just sit and hang out. And it just envelops her with visuals and sound, and it makes her feel really good. She's always so happy when she leaves there. So there's, in a sense, something for everyone, even if you can't or don't connect with the Slime. There's other ways that the experience is going to impact you. I also say that if you're an adult, because a lot of us have forgotten how to play or we need permission to play, is when you do something you've never done before, and Slumu is, you know, 15 different moments of things you've never done before, walking on slime, slingshotting slime, right? All these different moments, that it actually starts to spark creativity because you're constantly experiencing at all levels something that you've never experienced before. And creativity comes out of that naturally. So when we bring people in, I think they're really skeptical. They're not sure. They don't want to play. They don't want to get dirty. And once they get into it, it's hitting them on many different levels.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think that's so innate to the human condition, that when we're not given an aim, when we're let to just kind of play and have fun and just waste time, as some kind of adults have been taught to see, you know, activities like this, then we can't help but kind of sit there and brainstorm and let our minds wander and kind of rethink, you know, conversations and find kind of all sorts of answers we may not have been looking for. And I think that's such a wonderful thing, because like you say, so often we're not encouraged to play as adults. And maybe the kind of the nearest version of that that is very mainstream is, you know, sports. Is so many like activities are put into the, you know, this sporting idea, but then often comes with that, okay, well, it's for my health, so it's important and serious. And maybe there's an element of competition either with others, or I've got times, or I've got certain weights that I need to be lifting. And so much of the focus gets into, okay, this is something I'm maybe was attracted to for fun, but how do I find productivity through it? And, you know, what you're presenting is something where it's like, no, this is silly, and the benefits come to you. It's not about setting targets.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Very well said.
And so tell me, Karen, then what this became. So starting off from a pop-up, and then what it is now, and what kind of impact you see for people.
So it has really blossomed into an incredible brand, and not just this one experience. I think when we opened, it was the last week of October of 2019. So we had a good 4 month run before COVID. And in those 4 months, we brought in over 100,000 guests. Wow. And I think that is a testament to the need. And what was so interesting is that while it was mostly families, a lot of the parents would leave and say, or the adults would leave and say, I actually found that I needed this more than my kid. Mm-hmm. And I had more fun than my kids did. And it's because I think we're so serious and life is freaking hard, you know? So like, I dread looking at the news in the morning because it's just always something. And we really had a chance during COVID to realize what we were doing, which was bringing connection, bringing the sense of touch back, because it's something that we actually lost. I mean, the thing I missed during quarantine more than anything was hugging people. Mm-hmm. And we came out of COVID realizing that we had the tenets of a really large scale potential global brand that can touch people. And we have now opened a space in Atlanta and a space in Chicago with 3 more planned. We've taken a step back to say, what is the media we're developing? Like the stories around our character, Slumu, and a world that is about inclusivity and mental health and mental wellness without being didactic, but like subtly giving you those messages and ways in which you could create joy for people through everything that we're doing and how do we evolve our experience? Because as this went on and we saw the smiles of our guests, I mean, for me, I got so much healing from seeing that and from building something that brought healing and joy to others, and knowing that I was part of something that had such a good feeling to it. It really gave me a lease on life again. And doing it with a friend like being, you know, 50-year-old women who've been through hell and have kind of been reborn in a way, it's got this kind of magical feeling to it that is something we're really, really grateful for.
The way you describe it there does sound like such a wonderful opportunity for adults to reconnect with their sense of fun and nostalgia in a way that, you know, I'm struggling to think of how many examples of that there are. Maybe only something like a Disneyland park, where it's something that was created for kids, but it is so normal for adults and groups of adults to go themselves. And so, yeah, it's exciting to see how the kind of the brand will expand there. And for you, Sarah, how do you see best tackling that idea that, you know, people may not get it, or they may not take seriously how important like fun and this kind of way of connecting with yourself and finding these mental health benefits? How do we tackle that skepticism that might be there?
We are working every day to bring in people that may not have natural access to the space. So we're bringing in literally busloads of school kids from Title I schools who probably could never afford a ticket to Slumu, but getting them in so they can experience it and know what it's like from being a 10 or 11 year old and actually experiencing that joy at a young age, which we hope they'll carry with them. One of the great things about Slumu is that you leave with a custom-made slime. So every kid who comes through our space, every adult who comes through, leaves with their own slime that they made. It has their own scent, their own color, their own texture, their own cute little charm. So they're going to carry something home that they can continue to play with. And we want them to, we'll go to people's desks and they'll have it on their desk. Like they're cherishing this slime because they've started to realize the benefits that they're getting from it. We're also, actively doing nights for adults and trying to make things really fun so that people will say, we always say, if you want to have a date night with either a blind date or a first date, you should come to Slow Mo, because if you can't connect over this experience, the
you,
person probably
you have bigger problems.
Right? So, you don't have to go to a bar or do things that may even not be the healthiest thing for you. You can come and do something like this and have fun and connect with someone.
Yeah. And if the date goes badly, you still walk away with slime. So you got a gift from
exactly.
yourself. No, I think that's great. And it sort of reminds me of, do you remember that trend there was of adults doing like pottery parties where, we'd all go and we'd like have drinks or we'd have dinner and we'd like paint pottery. And I wish that stuck around. So maybe this is the next one.
I mean, from your mouth. That's why, it's interesting because on Thursday we have the 300 adults coming from Google, and it'll be coming off of a 3-day event they're doing that really speaks to what is needed in today's world around inclusivity as a reaction to all the kind of emotions that people are experiencing, and that blends mental health and neurodiversity. I mean, I think a lot of these missions go hand in hand.
Yeah. Do you have anything to add there, Sarah?
No, I did want to add that one of the things that I think is also amazing about Slow Mo is that we've built the space for, in a sense, for adults. Like I always say, you could have a trash can of slime and kids are going to gravitate towards it. They just want slime. They instinctively know that's something really good. So we didn't make the space to look childish. It actually looks like either a great restaurant or a great hotel. Like adults will walk in and feel really good. It feel like it's been built for them.
Like
and they're
at
made
home
to
in
be.
The space. Yeah.
Yeah. And we believe that that just subconsciously will give people, once they enter this permission to play, or the fact that, this isn't a kid's thing. It actually might work for me.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading that, as you better try and understand, the extent of the impact here, you have a psychologist on staff. Could you tell me more about their role and what new findings there are?
That's you, Karen.
Oh.
No, you know what it was? Is that my mother was calling me and I was like texting her back to be like, I'm doing a podcast.
That happened. Mine does the same all the time. She seems to know.
Right. And that's why I went missing, because I was literally texting her and she was like, okay, but can you answer this question for me? And I'm like, no, I'm literally doing a podcast.
You'll be like, I will answer it on air and you'll have to tune in. No worries. So I was asking about the role of the psychologist and what they're finding.
A few different things. One is that in the very beginning, I had reached out to her because I said, I want to just understand what is happening to me that this is making me so happy. And I brought her slime. And as she was playing with it and we filmed this, she started to say like, okay, so I'm watching this form change and I'm getting excited. So it's like kicking in my endorphins and like dopamine. And, and then as I'm smelling it, I'm also smelling, the scent of this. And that reminds me of my, this memory of like a child. So she was talking about how scent is tied to memory and how when you're excited about something, it does trigger endorphins. And she also mentioned that when you're present in multiple senses at once and you're really present, it's impossible for your brain to go into another story, all the anxieties, whatever they are, the stresses, the anything that's bothering you. And the other thing that she said when she finally came to our experience when we created it was something that she loved. When you walk in, you get your slime name. And we got our slime name from a funny internet trend that we spotted in 2017, where people in the slime community were saying over and over, replace the vowels of your name with O-O, and that's your slime name. So slime is Slow Mo, Sarah Isuru, you are lucky because you get to be Booby, or you could be Boo Boo. If
you'd be amazed how many times people accidentally call me that. So, and I always think it's a sign of what some people might have on the brain.
No, it's cute. So she said, in some way, what you're doing is you're psychologically, subliminally giving them another identity where they could be silly, mm-hmm. where they could let go of like the boundaries of who they are in the outside world. And we also then did a study with her to really look at, you know, people and how they feel before coming to our experience and after. So we can kind of put some efficacy and some facts to this. And our dream is to really eventually do this, you know, with brain scans, but one step at a time.
That sounds brilliant. And I just want to let the listeners in on something, because you've referenced the slime community. And if people aren't aware, that's a whole thing. And I know firsthand, because I think like a lot of people in the pandemic, I came across slime creators. So people that make this stuff from scratch. And so I've never even purchased any myself, but I've come across those of people that I now follow that make it from scratch. And I found that like really kind of relaxing to watch. And so like, even from a distance, I've got to tap into some of this stuff. You know,
I don't want to forget to tell you this. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just got really, 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 really excited that we have a quote unquote kitchen where we're making the slime on the premises. So we're actually creating a whole career and a series of jobs for people in doing something that is all based on sensory, hashtag satisfying, and creation.
That's so fun. No, because it's a whole business for people now. Like, there are people that are specialists in creating like new kinds of slime, and how much glitter can we have in it? What different textures can we put with different ingredients? Like, how can we kind of make it feel like sticky or not sticky, but still kind of viscous and slimy? And it's a whole thing, right up to one of the funny things I found out was there's such a thing as a slime face reveal, which is some of these accounts where people are creators that get such a big following, but their focus is always on these videos of slime. You know, that's what I guess gets the views. Then people start to get curious about the curator, and then the fandom will want to like see the face of the creator, and that's a slime face reveal. So anyway, I thought I'd let the listeners in on this. When you say slime community, it is a whole community. And as we start to wrap up then, Sarah, could you share with us, if people want to experience these experiences, particularly our US listeners, where they can find your work?
Yeah, so we're here in New York, as Karen said, that's where we started. But we just opened Chicago and Atlanta, bigger and even crazier experiences than the one we have in New York, which I call our ballerina. And we are launching the end of this year in Houston, Los Angeles, and Charlotte, North Carolina. So we're always growing. The best thing for people to do is sign up for our newsletter or follow us on Instagram or TikTok. Our TikToks are hysterical. So in and of itself, it will give people a good laugh or brighten up their day. And we also hand make all of our slime. So we're making the slime in all of these locations. And you can, if you're not in one of the cities, you can order the slime online and we'll ship it out. And you can have a little piece of that happiness in your own home.
I love that. Okay, well, I'm definitely going to have to order some. And if you ever are looking at an Irish branch, make sure it's in Dublin for me, okay?
For sure.
Wonderful. And so we'll start to wrap up then. Is there anything else you wanted to add, Karen? Any final thoughts?
Well, no, I want your hands in slime.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame I don't have any here. I could have a slime reveal of my own. Well, now I'm biased. Now it's going to have to be yours all the way from New York. So there it is. We'll wrap up there. Thank you so much.
We'd love you to visit when you're in the US.
I will. I will promise that, because I love New York. I've only ever been once. And it's a wonderful, if kind of overwhelming, city. So I think a slime experience will probably be well due on my next visit.
For sure.
All right. And that's us. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was so wonderful to talk to you. You have such a really calming, amazing presence.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.